when people get dragged into these hearings, like pre-trial hearings or arraignment or a mental competency hearing, Howard teaches to simply say, you have failed to provide me enough information or knowledge upon which to form a responsive reply or enter a plea. What's your name? You have failed to provide me enough information or knowledge to form a responsive answer or enter a plea. What's your address? You have failed to provide me enough information or knowledge upon which to form a responsive reply or enter a plea. No matter what they say, no matter what they ask, they cannot proceed if you do nothing but say that. Now, if they go ahead and drag you into their court anyway, Howard's got six disclaimers. First one is all rights reserved. Because if you don't reserve your rights, you cannot use the other five until you have reserved your rights to use the other five. So you have to all rights reserved first, or some similar wording in your state's commercial code or the federal uniform commercial code. So all rights reserved is number one of the six. The second disclaimer is, I do not consent to these proceedings. That's right out of the Declaration of Independence. Government obtains its just powers with the consent of the governed. You have to tell them, I do not consent to these proceedings. That's number two. The third disclaimer is, I do not accept this offer. Whatever. It doesn't matter what the presentment or bill or paper they gave you. You do not accept their offer. Number four is, I do not now, I did not in the past, and I will not in the future intend to consent or accept. That covers past, present, and future. And all contract, in order to have a valid acceptance, must have intent. And since they never give us enough information or knowledge upon which to form a responsive reply, how can we possibly have formed an intent to consent or accept? We can't. Therefore, we don't. Therefore, we quit. Anyway, first is all rights reserved. Second is, I do not consent to these proceedings. Third is, I do not accept this offer. Fourth is, I do not, will not, and have not intend to accept or consent. The next one is, I do not recognize you. Because live natural people cannot recognize reflections or shadows. And fictitious shadows and reflections cannot recognize live, natural, private, flesh and blood people. Number six is, I demand that the prosecution's commercial indemnity bond be produced on the record in the evidence file. They hate that because now they cannot proceed or continue to proceed in administrative. You just raised the magic word, the evidence file. If there is any evidence in the evidence file, well, shucks, now they have to have a judicial hearing instead of an administrative kangaroo. They have to have an administrative hearing. And you know that blind lady with the scales of justice? She has to weigh the evidence because now there is evidence in the evidence file. They will deny that there is such a file. They'll deny that there even is an evidence file kept. But if you persist, you'll find out. Well, they'll make excuses. They'll say, oh, that's the prosecutor's office has it, or, you know, we don't keep that here. And they may say, oh, the judge has that in a separate, he has a separate evidence secretary. Well, that may very well be. But they will invent all kinds of excuses to get you off of and away from an evidence file even existing, much less having any evidence in, because only you can put evidence in an evidence file. A lawyer cannot put any evidence into the evidence file because all the lawyer has is hearsay. He wasn't there. All he knows or thinks he knows is what he's been told by his client or some witness to the alleged incident. And all of that is hearsay. So the lawyers cannot put any evidence into the evidence file, but you can. You're alive, natural flesh and blood. You can sign a sworn under penalty of perjury affidavit or declaration. And you have an absolute right. Part of your due process is the right to have the prosecution's commercial indemnity bond produced on the record in the evidence file to ensure that when they lose their action and have to pay the damages to the trampling or trespass they're performing upon your natural rights, that they have the ability and capability to reimburse you or indemnify you for that damage. And that's the amount of the injury. The damage is the amount of money. But under your due process, you're entitled to demand and have that produced on the record in the evidence file, which forces it into judicial. And right in their own 11th Amendment to the Constitution, it very clearly says the courts cannot hear any case in law or equity. So they cannot hear a case in law or equity. The only thing left is administrative. And when you deprive them of that, their courts can have no jurisdiction to hear anything. According to Ralph Winteroud, a researcher from Alaska, none of these agencies, not EPA, not FEMA, not IRS, none of these government agencies have any substantive enforceable regulations. The only kind of regulations they do have are agency internal, interpretive, which means some lawyer's opinion, interpretive regulations, which are unenforceable other than upon employees of the agency. So if you don't work for the ABC agency, none of their lawyer opinion interpretive regulations, which do not have the force and effect of law, none of them can be enforced against you, live natural people. The only regulations that could or might be able to be enforced would be substantive regulations if the agencies had followed the law and requirements laid down by Congress, which require a authorizing and enabling legislation or explanation of who the regulation applies to and upon what law or act of Congress that regulation is authorized to be promulgated by the agency. And then it has to be published in the Federal Register. None of these government agencies have any properly promulgated agency regulations, substantive regulations, published in the Federal Register. None of them. So none of these agencies have any enforceable administrative power. But nobody knows that, except those who listen to Ralph Winteroud's research and get hold of his documentation. Ralph's website is www.jusbelli. Somebody said that stands for war. The word belly is for war, fighting. It's a Latin word. Belligerent comes from that word. Belly, bellicose means fighting. Just Belli is the name of his website. .com, www.justbelli.com. And you'll have a picture come up. You can choose. One side says slavery, the other side says liberty. Well, check on liberty, and then you'll get to the rest of the knowledge on his website. He backs it up with documentation. He also has a weekly conference call, but he has different guests come on. It's not always about law research. Anyway, those are the six disclaimers that Howard has come up with to cut these guys off at the pass. First is all rights reserved. Second is I do not consent to these proceedings. Third is I do not accept this offer. The fourth is I do not now, will not, and have not in the past intend to consent or accept. The last thing is, or the next to the last thing is, I do not recognize you. And the last, number six, is I demand that the prosecution's commercial indemnity bond be produced on the record and in the evidence file. And if the judge refuses to acknowledge evidence file or claims he does not have a secretary that has or maintains for him an evidence file, the coroner does. The county medical examiner or coroner does have and is the final arbiter of and keeper of a evidence file. Because when you die, that's who keeps the evidence file that your paper existence has terminated. So he not only is more powerful than the sheriff, he's more powerful than a judge who is trying to secrete a evidence file or the existence of that there is even an evidence file in existence. The coroner absolutely does have and cannot deny that there's an evidence file in his custody. So you put your evidence into the coroner's file, and then when the case comes up, you subpoena the bailiff to go to the coroner and get the evidence file and present it to the court.
Dave, how do you get that evidence into the coroner's file?
I presume you go to the coroner's office and present it. It's evidence. You put it into the file.
Okay. Do you know of anybody that has done that?
I personally don't, because I'm not in the research end. I'm just in the answer the phone all day end and the seminar presenting end. You're getting into a technical detail there. I can probably get that answer for you. From
yeah. Well, I was just curious. You know, if you knew that would be very interesting information. If you could find it out, that'd be interesting to know, because you know, people do get the runaround in court on this putting stuff into the evidence file, as you know.
If you do these six disclaimers. Well, hopefully, if you do this comment that when you get taken into these hearings or pretrial hearings or arraignment, and just say you failed to provide me enough information or knowledge to form a responsive answer or enter a plea, they can't get past that to get you into the hearing or trial anyway. And then if you do get dragged into the hearing or trial, when you put those six disclaimers, all rights reserved, I do not consent to these proceedings. I do not accept this offer. I do not now, have not in the past, and will not in the future intend to consent or accept. And I do not recognize you, and I demand that the prosecution's commercial indemnity bond be produced on the record in the evidence file. That stops them, because there is no indemnity bond. All they have these days, the chintzy crooks, all they have is risk management, and they can't very well. I'm being polite.
I know you are.
They're,
I heard you choose your words.
I'd bite my tongue. Huh?
goodness. No, that's fine. Believe me, I if you want to speak, don't think you got to hold back here. I only made my comment earlier for a little humor, because we all feel, I think most of us anyway, feel the same way you do about this stuff. One other thing too, Dave, is, as you well know, don't ever go into a courtroom and have a judge ask you if you understand and acknowledge that you understand, because then you stand under their jurisdiction, right?
That's right. Absolutely correct.
Single little word, understand, don't ever understand anything they say in that courtroom. Never.
We teach to stay out of court altogether and dispose of these matters at the postal clerk's window with a postage stamp and send those documents back, because all these documents that they send, and it doesn't matter whether it's coming from a court or a lawyer or a judge or a government agency or Internal Revenue Service or any of these government agencies, they never send it to you with your name spelled fully out in all lowercase with no numbers. And they never send it to your state spelled fully out in all lowercase with no numbers. They only do and only can and can never do otherwise than to send it to a fictitious two capital letter federal zone with federal zone numbers. In fact, the zip code ZIP stands for Zone Improvement Program, ZIP. And since live natural people do not live in fictitious federal zones, regardless whether it's two capital letters or five or more numbers, people don't live in zones, whether they're numbered or two capital letters. You're committing mail fraud by keeping any papers or envelopes or documents that are sent to fictitious fiction zones. Live people do not live in fictitious fiction zones. So rather than commit mail fraud, we teach obey the law. And the law is when you get mail that's obviously misdirected or misdelivered, and it's not obviously not intended for you, the live natural man or woman, and they did not spell your state fully out in all lowercase with no numbers, then it's mail fraud for you to keep those papers or envelopes or documents. We do not,
because
cannot,
it hasn't gotten to the right place.
We do not and cannot give or sell legal advice, but we do give free advice. Do not break the law. We recommend that you not commit mail fraud, and the law says when you get accidentally or inadvertently or by mistake an envelope in your mailbox, if it's not correct, if it's not designated for you, if they did not spell your state fully out in all lowercase with no numbers, the law says, that's both the postal regulations and the laws say, you must return to the sender or return to the postal route carrier, mail carrier, and they will return to sender. But if you keep it, that is acceptance. The very definition of acceptance is right out of Corpus Juris Secundum. The definition of acceptance is intent to retain. They don't care if you crumple it up and retain it in your round circular file called a trash basket. If you keep it, you've retained it. So the way to not be tricked into the acceptance trap is to return to sender, and especially if it's a court document, we recommend when you return it to the sender, you put it in an envelope with both the sender's name and address, both as the sender and the receiver, and put their documents into that new envelope and send it back, delivery confirmation. Then you've got proof, or evidence at least, that the document was not kept, not retained.
Right. Goes back to the documentation. If you're going to do any kind of process, even this, have documentation to back up what you say you've done.
Either delivery confirmation or certified mail one way. Do not use the green postcard, return receipt postcard, because what goes on the back of the green certified mail return receipt postcard?
Your
name and address. That's doing something that's beneficial to some party and detrimental to some other party. By using that green postcard, you're falling into the acceptance trap, because the definition of acceptance, again, out of Corpus Juris Secundum, if you do anything at all that's beneficial to one party or detrimental to another party, you are making appearance in the case as a party to the case.
Okay,
if
Dave.
If it's not neutral, it's beneficial to somebody. If it's not beneficial to somebody or detrimental to somebody else, then it's neutral.
So then, would you say that delivery confirmation only falls into that same category?
No, delivery confirmation is fine. Or
okay.
Certified mail one way without using the green return receipt card is good.
Okay.
But
delivery
went,
confirmation actually would be a little better, because then you could print the thing off. Well, it's cheaper, but the other thing is you would have a delivery record that you could print off the Postal Service website and then take and get it round stamped at the post office for
and another thing,
validation.
Another thing we recommend in the upper left-hand corner above the return non-address, because that's domestic. Post location that the sender, it's going to be the person that sent it to you is name and address, both as the sender and the receiver. But in the upper left-hand portion of the envelope, we recommend you put the phrase, the number 3, third party affidavit of mailing. Because these lying, thieving cheats have been known to get on the witness stand under oath and swear that they got an empty envelope, certified mail from you. You are not dealing with honorable people. So
right.
To cut these lying, thieving, cheat pirates off at the pass, Howard recommends you put the phrase third party affidavit of mailing on the envelope so that they will think, you don't have to actually do this, they will think you got your secretary or your personal postal clerk to take the documents and put them into the envelope for you, and your personal secretary took the document-filled envelope down to the post office for you, and your personal postal clerk secretary put the postage on the envelope and handed it to the postal mail clerk and got the delivery confirmation or certified mail for you, and then your personal private postal clerk secretary gave you a sworn affidavit that they did all this, and that cuts them off at the pass so they do not get on the stand and lie and say they got an empty envelope from you, certified mail or delivery confirmation. But you've got to be sure to send a neutral, it cannot be beneficial to anybody or detrimental to anybody, just a copy of that you returned everything to the sender. You've got to send a neutral courtesy copy to the court clerk, so the court clerk will know that you sent the papers back to the sender.
It's the same thing. If you've got a court case and you put something into the court, you always have to send a copy of it to the other side. So you're doing the same thing with this, correct?
Yep. But the point is, the whole point of not falling for the acceptance and not falling for the appearance trap is so that the court clerk cannot docket the case with your name on their calendar, because they cannot do that until after they have service or service of notice or service of process. Again, that's part of your due process right. Well, the opposition has the same right. But if you do not send a courtesy copy, anonymous or neutral, a courtesy copy to the court clerk, you're relying on that when the arresting officer or whoever that sent you the original tickets, when they get their garbage back in the mail, certified or delivery confirmation, what if they just put it in their file cabinet? What if they don't run over to the court clerk and say, hey, I got that ticket back that I issued to that guy. I got that ticket back. Then the court clerk might know that they did not accomplish proper legal service or service of process. But you can't count on and rely, I wouldn't at least, I wouldn't rely on those lying, thieving cheats doing my CYA, covering your assets for you. I would be sure that the court clerk knew, but it's got to be neutral. Otherwise, it's beneficial to somebody and detrimental to somebody else, and you're making an appearance, so it's got to be neutral. Just send back photocopies and photocopy the proof that it was served back to the sender, the certified mail or delivery confirmation, to the court clerk. So the court clerk knows, oh, shucks, we did not get him to accept service or service of process or service of notice. And he has sent us documentation as evidence that he returned it to the sheriff or the arresting officer or the issuing attorney or whoever it was. It's got to be neutral. That's why people screw it up. They keep adding stuff. They keep adding Yahweh stuff and Constitution stuff and Bible stuff. And all. None of that has anything to do with the courts. The courts have only one stuff, and that is contract. Not Yahweh, not Constitution, not Bible, none of that. Strictly contract. The definition of a contract is the offer, the acceptance of that offer, at which point in time a contract arises by operation of law, by the acceptance. Suddenly the offeror can no longer withdraw his offer, and both parties are bound and held to specific performance of the terms of the contract by the acceptance. And that's why it is so critically important. Do not accept. Then there is no contract. If there is no contract, then there is no written agreement over which a controversy can exist, regardless whether it's called a case controversy or a controversy controversy. If you do not rise to the bait and fall for the trick where they never present a controversy, they just make wild accusations and assertions and wild statements to provoke you, and you and I rise to the bait and quibble, it's called traversing. Once we traverse, that's doing something that's beneficial to some, beneficial to them and detrimental to us. And that's why even the Miranda warning says, keep your mouth shut. But do people learn from these experiences? Evidently not. But that's why Howard says, say nothing. Do not say anything other than, you have failed to provide me enough information or knowledge upon which to form a responsive reply or enter a plea. Your Honor, if he says, I'm going to enter a plea for you, oh, well, Your Honor, you can enter any plea you want for yourself, but you are not my attorney, and if you insist, you'll have to step down from the bench. You cannot be both the judge and my attorney and enter a plea for me as my counsel. So if you want to enter a plea, you'll have to step down and not be the judge. You'll have to get some other Yahoo magistrate or clown in the gown judge in here.
And I'm not retaining you as my attorney anyway.
No, you're fired if you, yeah. I'm not paying you. You're not retained and you're fired anyway. If you do presume to stand in for my counsel of choice.
Yeah. Anytime a judge enters a plea for somebody, they are accepting the liability in the case. Right?
Yep.
So if they want to do that, well, if you want to take the liability, oh, okay. Thank you very much.
Well, we just try to teach people to stay out of court. Don't even risk.
Absolutely.
Why chance it? The way Frank Perdue used to say, the old chicken man, he used to say, why chance it? Well, I like his philosophy.
Why put yourself somewhere you don't want to be?
Yeah, for a 44-cent postage stamp at the clerk's window, you can send it back. Return to sender. Anonymous. Neutral. Courtesy copy to the court clerk. It's been sent back. Anonymous. Neutral. No consent, no acceptance. It's been returned to sender. No, you deprive them. They've got no service. No service of process. No service of notice. Subsequently, they cannot proceed. They cannot docket your name on a case or put that case on their calendar, on their docket. They've got to trick you into consent. It says right in their Declaration of Independence, with consent of the governed. So if you can avoid falling for that consent trap or acceptance trap, you can avoid all their garbage. And they've got no agency promulgated, properly agency promulgated, substantive rules. Even under their administrative, they don't. But nobody knew that until Ralph Winteround, thank you very much, revealed it. The only thing they do have are internal agency administrative interpretive regulations, which is some lawyer's opinion. They're not properly promulgated and do not have the force and effect of law. They do not have the Authorizing and Enabling Act or clause in front of it, and it's not been published, as is required by Congress, has not been published in the Federal Register. So if it has not been done properly, then it is not substantive and is not enforceable. So now the courts cannot adjudicate any case in law or equity, according to the 11th Amendment, and they also cannot adjudicate any case charging a code, title, or section number, because none of these agencies that would be bringing any charges against anybody for code, title, and section numbers, none of those agencies have substantive force and effect of law regulations. They don't have, well, Ralph Winteround spent years unraveling this.
Well, I've had one conversation with Ralph Winteround. he's a very interesting man, but we didn't get along too well, so
well,
we haven't
Ralph,
talked anymore.
Ralph has his ways. I heard him one time on a conference call with Sam Kennedy, and
oh boy,
Sam Kennedy was going on about the Restore America plan at that point in time in history. And Ralph was picking at nits at the edges about the chapter and verse and section numbers and all. He's very much a detail man. So everybody has their strong suit. Well,
oh, yeah.
That's Ralph's strong suit. I don't care what people may say about him. what he's got here is more valuable than any detractor's comments about Ralph May, whatever they may have.
Yeah.
The fact that he's revealed none of these agencies, not Internal Revenue Service, not the FEMA, Federal Emergency Management Act, Homeland Security, none of these government agencies have any enforceable substantive regulations. They've got nada, zip, bupkis. But nobody knew it. Nobody knew to challenge. So really, when they come at you with some charges, all people have to do is put in a motion to strike the plaintiff's claim under Court Rule 12B. Let's see, 6 is subject matter, and 5 is personam, and 4 is, let's see, there's the person, place, and thing. That's the in personam, the venue, and the subject matter. And but the point is, the court has no jurisdiction because the 11th Amendment says so. The court cannot hear any case in law or equity, and it cannot hear anything in admiralty, pardon me, in administrative, because there are no substantive, fundamental substantive regulations with the force and effect of law. So the court cannot adjudicate something it does not have the jurisdiction to adjudicate. Even if they do pretend to create a controversy, they got no agency.
Keyword, pretend.
Don't have the authority to do it. Now we know. We did not know all this before.
Okay. Anybody else have any comments or questions? I don't see anybody.
Hello, Dave?
Yes.
Yeah, Dave, he was talking about the APA, the Administrative Procedures Act of 1946. The administrative courts have been wrongly used. Rod Class has done excellent coverage of this. And the administrative courts are, we can only be the plaintiff in an administrative court. We cannot be the defendant. The courts were created for us to go after the government agencies and departments to correct the wrongs. And they were not intended for us. They flipped the cart before the horse again. And you can go right back into Senate Bill S-7 on the Public Law 404 of the 79th Congress, Chapter 324, Second Session, S-7. Labeled an act to improve the administration of justice by prescribing fair administrative procedure. And it's fully detailed. I'd be more than happy to send you a copy of it.
Well, that's interesting. Dave, are you familiar with that?
Yeah, Rod Class has been doing that. There's no question. That's absolutely correct.
Uh-huh.
But that doesn't alter the fact that the EPA, Environmental Protection Agency, has no substantive regulations that are enforceable with the force and effect of law, because there are no properly promulgated agency rules and regulations that have the authorizing and enabling legislation and have been published in the Federal Register.
Yeah, Dave, it wasn't talking EPA. It was APA, Administrative Procedures Act.
Well, that's an act. I was talking about an agency. Agencies, all these government agencies have no enforceable code, title, and section numbers that they can enforce because they have no properly promulgated regulations, all of them. These agencies are all bluff and smoke and mirrors.
I guess the point I'm getting at, I know you're correct there, but the point I'm getting is these courts are all administrative and they have no jurisdiction to begin with.
Right. We both agree from different angles. I agree with you on your angle, and you agree with mine on mine.
And we both do go back to the 11th Amendment, where the judiciary shall not be construed to have any power in law or equity. And any is a key word there. It wiped out all the judicial powers of the Judiciary Act and Article 3, Section 2.
Right. And that only leaves administrative left. And now, not even that can be applied. Because none of these agencies have properly promulgated agency substantive regulations.